Welcome to the Dermatology Podcast, the official podcast of the Journal of the European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology. I'm Christopher Horskamp.
I'm Seci Lumitoir.
And we are your hosts.
This week, we are speaking with Professor Johannes Ring, the current editor-in-chief of the JADV, where he will share his experiences and share with us his vision for the future of the JADV. But first...
In light of the COVID-19 pandemic, the EADV has decided to make its 29th Congress completely virtual. But we didn't scale down. Not at all.
That's right. For the 3 days of Congress, we will have more than 500 speakers giving 580 lectures in 170 different sessions. This is going to be big.
Continuing the tradition of high-quality and up-to-date topics in dermatology and venereology, immerse yourself in semi-live and on-demand sessions covering review and updates, special interest meetings, expert forums, training and educational forums, free communications, keynote talks, controversies, and of course, lectures dedicated to COVID-19.
CME credits?
Available from attending the semi-live sessions at the times they are scheduled.
Can they access the content after the end of the Congress?
All content will be available until January 31st, 2021. For more information, go to www.eadvvirtualcongress.org.
The EADV Virtual Congress, from October 29th to October 31st. New frontiers in dermatology and venereology.
And now... Professor Johannes Ring has served as the director of the Department of Dermatology and Allergy at the University Hospital of the Technical University of Munich. He served as the EADV president from 2004 to 2006. In his career in academia, he published over 600 original scientific papers and currently serves as the editor-in-chief of the Journal of the European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology. One of his newest projects he has taken on is the role of the executive producer of this podcast. Professor Ring, thank you for being with us today on our first interview and actually our first episode of this podcast.
Welcome, Professor Ring.
Hello, I'm honored.
Would you mind telling us a little bit more about yourself and how you ended up in the field of dermatology?
Well, my career went funny ways because I never knew that I would become a dermatologist when I finished my medical studies.
Really?
As a matter of fact, I always did what I like to do. I'm a hedonist in my duties. What was most exciting, there I went, and good people. I wanted to be in a team where there is some spirit, and I had the good luck. So I started as immunologist in research, then became allergist, and finally dermatologist. And the teacher was Otto Braun Falco. He was a very famous and good dermatologist. So retrospectively, it makes sense, but prospectively, it was a bit chaotic.
And so from there?
When you ask me, how did I come to EADV? I started, so to say, the political activities in ESDR, the European Society of Dermatological Research. This was before EADV was founded.
So at that point, the ESDR was the only European society in dermatology?
I realized I'm European, I'm academic, I'm dermatologist, so this has to be my society. And that's why I joined and became active in this. And I like it very much, meanwhile.
What achievements have made you the most proud as a dermatologist and as a researcher?
Well, the achievement in science, what to say, in the allergy field, I was proud in doing research in anaphylaxis. Some of the classification of anaphylaxis is still named after a paper in the Lancet. In dermatology and allergy, bringing together those two sides, I'm a bit proud of that we proved that allergy plays a role in atopic dermatitis, which was not so clear and was vehemently discussed, but we could show that it is. And finally, the environmental influences as a whole, pollution in the air, pollen, they influence also the skin. So this was a big part of my research, and it was always exciting.
It sounds like you really get inspiration from a lot of different fields, different aspects of science and medicine. Is that something you do in your personal life as well?
Yes, I'm curious, you know, and I like variety and diversity. So whenever something comes up which looks exciting. I want to have a look at it.
Now, what are the best and worst parts of being editor-in-chief of a high-impact factor journal, specifically the JEADV?
I can tell you the best part is that you see continuously new developments. You are at the front line. And this is the contents and the daily life. The best part is to working with this wonderful team. We have a fantastic editorial team, Azao Zarokava, Zechi Lumitbar, Lila Anafradi. It's fantastic. Our regular video Skype conferences, this makes the journal alive, you know. And of course, it is a lot of fun to work together with the group of associate editors and section editors, which we have since some years. And they also, they carry a lot of the workload. And I can tell you, in the Corona times, April, May, we had 700 manuscripts per month.
Oh, wow.
This is incredible. And we are now at 3,600 already for the year 2020. So this is a lot of work, and you need very good and very dedicated people, and I'm very thankful to them.
It seems you have a highly performing team right now, and this is evident from the considerable increase in impact factor to even the visual identity of your publication.
It was a very good moment when the impact factor first reached 4. When I took over, it was 2.8. Now we are over 5. But this was a major step forward. But almost as good or even better felt the moment when we changed our general appearance to this cover picture, what is now so characteristic for our journal. And the cover pictures are produced by Laurence Zulianello, and she does an excellent job. I'm looking forward every month to the new cover picture.
And the worst part of being editor-in-chief?
And the worst, I have to say, the worst is to have to reject so many also good papers. Because we have such a flood of manuscript submissions that at the moment we are almost at 95% rejection. And there's good stuff. And I feel sad, and I write a special letter sometimes, but we have no choice. It's just too many manuscripts. So this is not easy.
For our listeners out there, maybe some of them have had a paper rejected. Granted, it's common for researchers to experience this, but what would you say to them?
Always try. I hope that our letters, even the rejection letters, are positive in the content. Never give up. And thanks God, there are a lot of other journals, also good journals. We recently made an analysis what happened to those rejected papers. And we found out that many of them, 200, 400, found their way into high impact journals. Not as high as our journal, only 3 of them went to a journal with a higher impact factor. But anyhow, they find their way. And therefore, I always tell especially the young authors, it's no shame. I personally, when my paper was 3 times rejected, then I let it sit on the desk and wait a little, whether it's really so interesting. When I felt after 3 months, I still want to publish, then I try again. So this happens to very good authors. So, and also in our journal, there is no exclusive criterion. So everybody can submit anything when it's good, when it's original. It can be accepted.
And since now we're talking about the JEADV as a part of the editorial team, I would like to ask some questions. So what are some evolving fields that the JEADV is going to focus on in the upcoming years?
This is a difficult question because there will be, or in my philosophy, there is no topicality. So we do not say we will focus now on skin cancer, or focus on allergy, or focus on venereology. We will focus on high quality and wherever it comes from. So I have been editor of another journal in Germany, where we had not enough manuscripts. So it was the opposite, like I have it now. And then the temptation is very big to make thematic issues. Just 1 month only Urticaria and another month only. But this is the beginning of the end, because then you will not get the fresh, top, most actual papers. So our philosophy is to take the best, but of course, the topics of interest in the community are skin cancer, allergy, environmental influences, from therapy, targeted therapy, you know, these very new, fantastic, exciting possibilities with biologics, but also with specific kinase inhibitors coming out of the pipelines all over the world. Then, of course, diagnostics, the new imaging techniques. It's fantastic what papers we get and what can be done today from the outside. Before you have to take a biopsy, you can look into the skin and see a lot. Then also, some people call it soft science, public health, or psychosocial aspects of our skin diseases. They are tremendous and they are not so well recognized by everybody. So this is another very important aspect. And as I said, we take all papers when they are excellent and when they bring something new.
And could you tell us the key requirements for a research study to be published in the JEDV?
Well, the key requirements, new, original something, and a message, you know. I don't like an article entitled "To the Problem of Itch in Urticaria." Come on. I want the message. Itch is the most crucial symptom of urticaria or something, you know. So when there is a clear-cut message, when it's not too long, and good pictures. We are a visual discipline. This is very important. Excellent pictures. So don't even try to submit lousy pictures. This is an insult for the editor.
And in your opinion, what makes publishing in the JEDV special?
I think our readership, I don't have the numbers exactly, but our readership is very large. I think we are the largest in Europe. We have almost 10,000 members of the Academy who get every issue each month. And we have manuscripts and downloads from all over the world. So we are European in our location, but the journal is truly international. And I think this is a chance also for the authors. They are read all over the world.
For sure. And if I may ask, which is your favorite article of all time?
This I cannot answer.
Between us, just between us.
I have every year a hard time when we do this best paper of the year session at our Congress, together with the Blue Journal in America and the British Journal and the Japanese. So each of us has 15 minutes to present the best papers of the year in this journal. And I pick out maybe 20, and I have a hard time to pick out those 20. So I cannot tell you one favorite article. And honestly, we have to be a little bit humble. Our journal is not a journal where Nobel Prize papers will be published. So I cannot say, well, this was the first report on PCR reaction or something, you know. We are a clinical journal and we have to be modest. But we have many good I cannot tell you which was my favorite article.
And for our listeners, the editor's pick of the year will actually be semi-live at the EADV Virtual Congress on the 29th of October from 10 to 11 o'clock, and CME credits will be awarded to those who watch it live. I'd like to know a little bit more about your thoughts on the role of technology in podcasts and dermatology. Based on your perception, how are new technologies and trends like AI, big data, the internet, and social media shaping dermatology and venereology?
This started some years ago we were not the fastest, I think, in our journal. But of course, we started to have electronic only parts of the journal, like all the letters, electronic only supplements, also including videos in some articles. So, and now comes like a flood, and this has to do with COVID, with the corona pandemia. This forced many people to go to virtual communication and online meetings. And so telemedicine and teledermatology got a big push in the recent half year. This is quite clear. Some people are already worried that it may be too much and dermatologists may be superfluous, may lose their job. But I tell you, this was discussed with every new invention in the history of mankind. And so there are new things, and when they are in your field, you better take them, use them, and put yourself ahead of the train instead of complaining. So I think this is an amazing trend, and we are just starting. Also with social media and things like that. We have a social media editor, and so this is just at the beginning.
What are the advantages and disadvantages? What are your thoughts on self-diagnosis with mobile apps and websites? There are sites like WebMD and Wikipedia, and a lot of patients now are starting to research on their own before they even get to a doctor's office.
This is an increasing custom. It always has been that patients also are able to read and get knowledge not only from the doctors. So the patients are better and better informed. And I like it. So this saves a lot of work in instructions and talking about the disease. But of course, it makes some problems in discussing wrong opinions. And my philosophy, never quarrel with your patient. So never fight with your patient. So listen. And of course, I have to be honest. When they ask me, doctor, what do you think about? I say, I don't think this is a good method. So, but this costs a little bit of time. But on the whole, I think the patient has to be involved in the diagnosis, treatment, in the management of his disease. Because I'm not around. He is sick, so he has to know what he has, he or she, and he has to know what to do. I tell some of my patients with chronic skin diseases, at the end, you will be your own dermatologist. You will know which type of ointment or cream you have to apply on what part of the body and when. And for catastrophes, please come back to me. I will not withdraw, but you take over. And this patient empowerment, as it is called, is very important.
Right, absolutely. And so for the medium we are using today, what do you think about the role of podcasts in the field of dermatology and venereology?
I am very honest. I am not the most modern IT individual. I heard this, the use of podcasts in dermatology, first by my friend, Professor Gutemuth in Brussels. He's in the Free University. And he suggested, why, Johannes, don't we do podcasts with your journal? This was 2 years ago, because he said, when I'm driving in the car, I have to drive a lot through Belgium, I like to listen in the car. And half an hour podcast is a fantastic thing to give me an update on some development. And so I thought this is a good idea. So, and that's why, and many others people, of course, supported the idea. And I think a problem is the podcast is audio and dermatology is visual. So some things you cannot transport by voice only. So for some things you have to give pictures. But this is, and you better should not look a video while driving. There's so much information, it is impossible to read all the relevant journals of your field. So you need, like when you visit Rome or a city, you need a guide. And such a guided tour through the news of information in our field, I would like to have. And then I trust this guide and follow, and I will get in this half an hour, I will get something new, which I would probably have missed or not found by myself.
So what are the characteristics that can make a dermatology podcast excellent in your eyes? What's that little bit extra that you think the audience is looking for?
The little bit extra, I think it should be new and interesting. There should be a story regarding a problem and having a message, best if there is a practical recommendation at the end, because our readers are mostly practicing dermatologists in the hospital or in the office. So this, I think, not long lectures starting with Adam and Eve about the disease and so, but concise, one problem, small aspect, but important, short message, practical relevance. I think this I would like to have.
So let's talk about the audience a bit. To whom, when, and how it can be useful to listen to our podcast?
Let me put it this way. Everybody interested in the skin can have a benefit listening to these podcasts, you know. So we are not producing secret information with a high fence only for dermatologists, and nobody else is allowed to listen. No. If you want to listen and understand, please do so. And of course, there is the language, the scientific language. Something is not understandable for non-dermatologists. I have to say, we have a very peculiar, difficult language. And therefore, we try to do it in plain language, like the culture and science part in a good newspaper, Neue Zürcher Zeitung, for instance, or Frankfurter Allgemeine. When you read science there, you understand, even if you are not a specialist, but you get a message on what is new in another field. So our podcasts should have this level, high level, but understandable.
Other than the podcast, are there any other developments or news you'd like to share with our audience?
EADV is thinking to start a new journal, a sister journal to JEADV, with more clinical practice, JEADV clinical practice, where we really have not so much translational science and basic science, but where we really touch practical things and also education. And in this new journal, we probably will also offer information to Allied Health, maybe even have separate pages. This will be online only, so it is easy to access or to print out parts. Patient corner, for instance, 5 pages for patients, and the doctor can leave them in the waiting room, or patients can be asked and bring their opinion to some problem. And I think this dialogue with the patients and with the Allied Health personnel is very important. We are in privileged countries, Switzerland, Germany, Europe, but looking around the world, Africa, there is a shortage of dermatologists. People cannot travel. So when they are far from the city, their teledermatology is crucial. And help with nurses is, they call them health medical officers, HMOs, is the basis of patient care in those countries. So, and I think this should be supported also by our journal.
Indeed, exciting news about the sister journal.
Let's talk a little bit more about patients now. What are your thoughts on the evolving role as patients from passive recipients to active participants of their care in general?
When you look in history, it started with the doctor as the priest or almost the god, and then the doctor as the chief and patriarchalistic concept. I try to talk to my patients and treat my patients at the same eye level and very open, discuss what we can do. Then the patient has to decide. Most of the time, the patient will ask me, what would you do, doctor? It's good. Then I would say, if I was you or if you were my brother, I would say, let's do this. But never from above to below, you know, this. So there is a much more, we can say friendly or relaxed attitude between doctors and patients nowadays.
With your experience with patient organizations, what are your thoughts on the role of the patient communities in these podcasts? How can they be defined, and how can we ensure that we make the patient voice heard?
The patient organizations, and I spent a lot of time with especially the eczema associations, but also psoriasis and other diseases. And 2 years ago, we did a big study in Europe, in 9 European countries, on the individual suffering, burden of disease in atopic eczema from the view of the patients. So, and this was done together with the patient organization. And well, it was published in our journal finally, anyhow. But it was in so far new that patients even were authors of this paper. So, and parts of this big study have been even published by the patient as a first author, because this patient was so active and contributed so much. They said, now you will be the first author.
Wow.
I think this was unusual, but so without patient organizations is much more difficult when you in your office only have your own patients. This, you don't have the time to recruit so many, you see. So you have to have a good relation with the patient organizations.
So now we would like to talk about the hot topics and, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic. Professor Ring, what are the current hot topics in dermatology and venereology research and practice, which should be definitely discussed in a podcast?
The corona pandemic at the beginning started as a lung disease, respiratory disease. People thought this is the only organ in, well, the airway in the lung is the major organ, until slowly it became apparent that many other organs are also involved. And I think we had one of the first papers in March describing skin manifestations. It was Dr. Rick Calcati in Lecco in the Lago di Como who dared to say, oh, I look at my patients and they also had something on the skin. And since then, a flood of papers is coming about cutaneous manifestations and the problem of skin in corona infection is manifold. So first of all is what do the COVID patients show on the skin? And there was this enigmatic occurrence of chilblains in April, March, April, May, where it was not so cold anymore. Usually the chilblains in our part in Middle Europe, they occur in January. And it was COVID patients, but then papers came. No, it is also in patients COVID negative, but at the same area, living at the same area. Until today, it is not solved, but it is exciting story. And just as an example. But what is more important regarding skin and corona is that the other question we have in our office, are skin patients, are patients with skin diseases at a higher risk to develop corona or get a more severe course of this infection? This comes many telephone calls are coming with this question. Or are certain medications these patients have to take for their skin disease, like, for instance, immunomodulating substances or biologics for psoriasis, for eczema, are those drugs risky with regard to Corona? Should we stop them? And there were many position statements of the different groups dealing with this question, because there was a lot of confusion and uncertainty. And a final further question is the risk of the health personnel, the nurses, the doctors, during Corona, with all the more intense disinfectant procedures and hygiene rules and cover up masks and garments. These people are at a higher risk to develop skin conditions like hand eczema. There's a rise in hand eczema just from the irritant dermatitis. And this has to be known, and people have to do something against, namely cream or put emollients on their skin in order to prevent this eczema. So there's a lot of aspects when we talk about skin and COVID-19.
And what do you think about the effect of coronavirus on dermatology in terms of practical implications, such as teledermatology and shaping the research agenda?
The effect of the pandemic on the practice of dermatology was very serious in many countries, because many wards, hospitals, offices were almost closed. Patients couldn't or didn't dare to attend the clinics. So there was a real decrease in good patient care for many other diseases. And so some things were then done by teledermatology, but still it was a big problem in many parts. And now one has learned and has to make the selection, what can be done by teledermatology, where is a face-to-face contact absolutely necessary, and many of these questions, until of course when it comes down to the practice and management of the office, it has to be reimbursed. Teledermatology cannot be for free, you know. So and this has to be, is a bureaucratic process in many countries different, and I think in Germany they just started to offer a modest reimbursement also for teledermatology, because you can spend a lot of time, but if it's not reimbursed, then you can close your office. So this has to be organized. And so COVID had a lot of influence, I think, on many, almost every discipline, but also on dermatology.
And one last question. What will be the biggest challenge in the coming 10 years in dermatology?
The biggest challenge, apart from, now let's not talk about the pandemic, this is a special problem, but general in dermatology, looking over the decades, the biggest challenge at the moment is to find a good way to keep clinical dermatology at a high level in the offices for every patient, and not go totally only to aesthetic medicine. So in many countries, there is a trend towards cosmetic aesthetic dermatology. And sometimes doctors tell me, I couldn't do my office if I would not do these procedures, you know. And there's nothing to say against these procedures, but it should be clear that a dermatologist can make a decent living by treating patients with skin diseases and not being forced to do rejuvenation and things like that just to survive. This is a challenge, and the trend is very strong. And the young people, they go where the action is, and it is more and more difficult to keep good young people in the science, in the research for dermatology, also in academia, because not only the money is less, but also the bureaucracy in the hospitals and university has reached a level where people say, no, I make my own office. I will not stay in universities. You know, the future to get the brightest and best for dermatology is a bit in danger.
Would you like to say anything about the Congress, which will be virtual this year?
The electronic part of our business has increased to a level where we do the whole Congress, digital only. It's a pity. I love Vienna so much, but nobody will go to Vienna. But we will have an exchange. Also, our Meet the Editors session and pick of the year. And I'm looking forward. And for this virtual Congress, we also produced a special issue, a virtual issue only of our journal, with a selection of good articles of 2020. So also have a look at this together with the virtual Congress.
Professor Ring, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate you taking the time and your support in this podcast.
Thank you, Professor Ring.
I thank you. It was fun. Sigil and Chris, have a good day.
That was Professor Johannes Ring, former president of the EADV, former director of the Department of Dermatology and Allergy at the University Hospital of the Technical University of Munich, and current editor-in-chief of the JEADV and executive producer of this podcast.
Thank you for joining us.
And join us next week as we interview Professor Karl Paul, the current president of the European Academy of Dermatology and Venereology.